The Challenstein asteroid stretched half a billion miles in length, spinning like a cosmic Mobius strip in a never-ending orbit around the star Arcades. Approximately every 3 months or so, the Sun and its three planets lined up in formation. The light and reflected light combined to form an unforgettable spectacle, the Rainbow Dawn. According to the tourist brochures, it was a captivating symphony of color, a rhapsody of the rainbow, a cosmic event so truly special, so truly blessed, that every sentient being should make the trek to see it at least once in their lifetime. A massive space hotel had been constructed several hundred miles inside the asteroid's orbital path, with no expense spared to make it one of the most luxurious destinations in the Magellanic Cloud. Glassine and titanium steel combined in a state-of-the-art construction that was a work of architectural merit in its own right, and every room had a view. 2,000 tourists were cared and catered for by 1,000 state-of-the-art servo droids. The gossip in the tourist agencies maintained that if you had to ask how much a week at the Challenstein Ritz cost, not only could you not afford it, you were a piker. Nobody ever booked for less than a month. Now the tourists were flooding into the hotel's spectacular dome ballroom. Perched at the very top of the sprawling space structure, the ballroom's glassine walls and curving roof formed one gigantic viewing dome, where the galaxy's good and great gathered to watch the Rainbow Dawn. And each other.
I really must tell my friends. They'll be sick with envy.
No cameras allowed, sir.
The Schrump Alamode is exclusivity
of this.
It's like they're dancing just for us.
The Rainbow Dawn is special.
As they danced across the ballroom, through the toughened glassine dome, they could see the asteroids rolling and tumbling on their eons-long path. The space rocks were still mainly black, glistening lumps. Every now and again, one would reflect the twinkling light of some distant star. But the triple planetary alignment with Arcades was fast approaching, and with it, one of the most memorable sights in the known universe. A sudden flash of light from the rising sun stabbed past the space hotel. When it struck the spinning asteroids, there was an explosion of every color in the spectrum. The entire belt seemed to spring into life, shimmering and glowing with 100 rainbow hues.
Absolutely exquisite.
I've never seen anything like
it. What's that? It looks like one of them is heading this way.
In the hotel's nerve center, the monitor room from which everything else was run, robot scanners tracked the apparently wayward asteroid. The Ritz was equipped to handle any eventuality, including being fitted with atomic disruptors for use on asteroids with potential wandering tendencies.
Sir, object is too small to be an asteroid.
Object is leading a fleet of craft in this direction.
Establish communication.
No comm link accepted, sir.
Collision is unavoidable.
Prime the disruptors.
On the hotel's exterior, defensive gun turrets swiveled and realigned themselves, so they pointed in its direction. Dense bolts of sun-spawned energy poured from the Alpha's outstretched hands, instantly homing on their targets. The disruptor towers disappeared in gouts of flame and explosion that blotted out the rainbow effect.
Dear God, what's happening?
In the ballroom, joy and revelry turned to uncomprehending fear. The occupants of the huge dome could see where the gun turrets were burning, and still the rogue swarm sped toward them.
Would all couples in the ballroom please cease dancing? The shops are now closing. All guests must head for the lifeboats in an orderly fashion. Do not panic. I repeat, do not panic.
Few things are more likely to induce panic than being told not to. But fleeing was futile. Many of the guests merely stood, their heads raised, awestruck as they watched the fast-approaching fleet with the flying stone figure at its head. The Alpha burst through the dome in a storm of shattered glassine. Livid red beams blasted from the creature's eye sockets. There was a sudden arctic chill as the dome's air was sucked out into the vacuum of space. A series of small explosions shook the hotel's superstructure, sending low-frequency vibrations juddering through its floors and walls. Then the Challenstein Ritz blew itself apart. Angel Eye's needle ship sat well out of detector range, its electron-scanning telescope relaying back the destruction of the Ritz.
Recorded?
The whole bishang, Angel Eyes.
Formatted for sending back to Quarantinos. Copy to the Galactic Cups. Oh, copy to the Ritz owners, too. I guess their insurance company might want to chip in a few creds for the reward.
At the control console, Vert busied himself following Angel Eye's instructions. The ship was too cramped for the four of them, really. Different when they were traveling. They could put up with the discomfort, knowing that it was only temporary. But waiting was a whole new ballgame. The Kund weren't noted for their ability to sit still, unless they could hit somebody at the same time.
Ifra, Ifra, you're easy. Enough is he.
The Arcturan sat with his back to the others, his face buried in the folds of his hood. He had rubbed off some of the sigils he'd drawn on the bulwarks and replaced them with fresh occult symbols. He was lost deep in himself and paid no heed when the others squabbled. The tentacles of Cabale's strange mind had reached out as far as Verk, and the Arcturan was astonished to find the cells of the captives empty. This put a different spin on everything. No doubt the superheroes would pursue the Alpha, and Lobo would too, for revenge as well as the bounty. Slowly, Cabale withdrew from his inner depths. He turned himself around to face the others.
The Alpha's prisoners are free. Even now, they are on their way here in pursuit.
Damn. And double damn. We're already gonna be taking a chance going up against the Alpha itself. But it'll be suicide if these three are against us too.
It is possible. My magic may be enough to quell them all.
And if it's not? I'm not so sure, Cabale. Lobo and the others ain't just ordinary guys.
Has my magic ever failed us?
No. But
magic is merely a matter of willpower. Mine has been honed to a remarkable degree.
All the same, I think it's safer to wait. Tell you what, Big Blue and his pal can take down the Alpha and Lobo can help them. Then we step in and pick up the reward.
And Lobo will just let us? I mean, I like a good fight as much as the next coon, but not when the odds are stacked against me.
Right.
I can take Lobo. I am sure I can take all of them if necessary.
All Arcturans chosen for the path of magic were trained from childhood to develop a remarkable confidence in their own occult abilities. At base, sorcery was willpower. And if that willpower ever flagged, then the magic would also fail. Arcturus was a closed society with a rigid hierarchical structure. At the top of the pyramid, a small elite of adept warlocks ruled the planet. A few thousand others, like Cabale, mediated between the rulers and the mass of ordinary, downtrodden people. Visitors from off-world were actively discouraged, and although they might want to, few of the natives ever left their darksome world. Cabale's ambitions had been his downfall. Forbidden by convention to practice live sacrifice, Cabale had used the sacrificial deaths of his inferiors to boost his own growing powers. A death warrant was issued against him, and packs of assassin priests were sent out to hunt him down for ritual slaying. He managed to get off-world, where he knew the insular Arcturans would not follow. He drifted from planet to planet, an outcast wherever he went. Those who knew of Arcturus feared him. Even those who'd never heard of the occult world gave him a wide berth. Despite the religious figure he cut in his robes and voluminous hood, Cabale exuded menace. No doubt he would have ended his days as a petty criminal on the run, hunted down for bounty. But everything changed the day he met Angel Eyes. The tall, gaunt bounty hunter had burst into a bar on Raimi's world, those amazing golden eyes gleaming with lust for the kill. The Arcturan was drinking water at a shadowed corner table and nearly jumped out of his robe with surprise. Five customers went down in lifeless heaps, but not a single innocent had a hair on his head harmed. Angel Eyes was a dead shot. As the bounty hunter checked his warrants against the corpses, a sixth outlaw emerged from the restroom. The newcomer sized up the situation in a glance and swiftly drew his gun. Angel Eyes had his back to him, unaware of the other's presence. Cabale thought hard. A bolt of mental energy seared into the outlaw's mind.
What?
The Arcturan could see fear in the man's eyes as his movements suddenly became no longer his own. Perspiration beaded from the villain's forehead as he raised the gun to his own temple. From that moment on, Angel Eyes and the Arcturan had worked as a team. No qualifications were necessary to become a licensed bounty hunter, other than the ability to outwit and outfight the prey you were after. Angel Eyes and Cabello soon gained an enviable reputation for both ruthlessness and reliability. They picked up the two warlike coons more for muscle than for their social skills. Randon and Vert were typical of their kind, vulgar, rude, and prone to unforeseen fits of aggression, but they were strong, dependable, and loyal, and they had no qualms about killing. The foursome began working together, more than a match for the criminal gangs they specialized in tracking. The violence was guaranteed, the pay was good, and the sex followed naturally. All four had salted away a nest egg for the day when they would retire, although they all knew, without it ever being said, that that day would never come. They were professional killers. Like the pros they were, they'd die on the job. One day, sooner or later, some bad guy would get them.
I got an idea, guys. We're going to eliminate all risk to ourselves. Strap yourselves in. Randon, set us a course.
We are leaving? For where?
We're going to get a little cake and coffee and buy ourselves some insurance at the same time.
Do not speak in riddles.
You know that babe Lobo Sweet on?
The waitress? I've eaten at her place. Good shrimp.
Lobo goes weak at the knees when she's around. Turns into a total sap. So it seems to me we should pick her up and bring her to the party.
Lobo couldn't make up his mind how he was feeling. It was a novelty for him to be streaking through space, flanked on either side by one of the galaxy's greatest superheroes. By rights, their very presence should have made him sick. And yet, contrary to everything he thought he knew about himself, he was feeling tickled pink. Zentex had maintained his sulky, brooding silence. They were on their way to the galactic equivalent of a championship heavyweight fight, lasers and knives permitted, and there were still two cans of suds chilling in the bike's cooler. He flicked his eyes left and right, seeing first Superman, then the Martian Manhunter, as the trio flew in perfect synchrony. Square jaws, capes flowing behind them, an aura of grim determination, based on the thesis that good always wins out over evil.
Not in my world it doesn't, and not in the real world either. The winner wins. End of story.
Lobo didn't like the duo any more than he ever did, but he did like the fact that they would help capture the Alpha, yet he would waltz away with the reward. There was no doubt about it, they were gentlemen. Or, as Lobo pronounced the word, chumps. There were three planets in the Arcades system. Krynoz, closest to the sun, was the least advanced. Its high temperatures and rate of orbital spin had made it difficult for life to gain a foothold, although once it had, it evolved rapidly. Now the planet's inhabitants were roughly at the Neolithic stage of development, family-based tribes that lived nomadically. The second world, Sandoz, was much cooler, its atmosphere more stable and dense. The humanoid races that evolved here had larger brains than their counterpart on Krynoz. Their mechanical bent was demonstrated in the size and armaments of their well-equipped armies. They'd been fighting the equivalent of Earth's First World War for around a century, with neither side having gained any real advantage. Galioz was farthest from the sun, only a few hours' journey in from the Chauenstein asteroids. Evolution had been favored on Galioz by the presence of vast oceans. The indigenous peoples had remained true to their aquatic origins. More than half of their population was housed in colossal floating cities. Normally anchored to the seabed, the vast urban conglomerations were also capable of navigating the endless blue deep. It was to Galioz that the Alpha came next, leading his armada of death. As the fleet of crystal ships drew closer, small groups peeled off and soared away in search of their targets. Unlike the Ritz Hotel, this assault would avoid destruction as much as possible. The Galioz cities housed vast nutrient factories, where plankton from the oceans was processed into every kind of food imaginable. The Alpha had already ascertained that his Vrkan warriors would be able to exist on such a diet, and an army marches, or flies, on its stomach. The Alpha's electromagnetic powers allowed it to seek out and pinpoint Galeazzo's off-world communication centers. It would strike these centers itself. In the early stages of its campaign, surprise was essential. As many worlds as possible must fall before resistance could be organized. Twin gun turrets atop one of the city's graceful spires tracked their prey. Above them, two of the crystal craft were heading directly their way. Whoever was aboard, they were maintaining radio silence and refusing to answer any incoming calls. It could only be assumed that their intent was hostile. But just out of range of the turret guns, the spaceships slowed almost to a walking pace. Their nose cones began to glow, building to a vibrant orange. Suddenly, pulsed beams of energy streamed out of the cones, widening in concentric circles as they expanded to cover the entire city. This was a technology way beyond anything the peoples of Galeazz could conceive. On landing strips that reached like concrete fingers into the ocean, civil defense aircraft taxied and took to the air, directly into the path of the pulsed beams. The pilot's reaction was near instantaneous. A red knot of anger took root in their guts, burgeoning into an all-consuming rage as it coursed through their nervous systems. Their minds blanked out, overcome by a fury so strong, they began visibly to sweat and shake. Within seconds, the enraged pilots had turned their craft's weapons on each other. Seconds later, the planes plunged out of the skies without ever having fired a shot at their foe. Such was the potency of Lobo's synthesized and amplified emotional energy. Masses of people crowded onto the streets as wave after wave of pure Lobo-esque rage broke over them. Hormones flooded their bodies, building their stress levels to unprecedented degrees. Driven by sheer anger, thousands of citizens attacked each other, while thousands of others committed suicide. Still more fell to the streets and lay still as their hearts gave out under the emotional stress. Still, the beams intensified until at long last, not a soul moved the length and breadth of the city. Bodies were scattered everywhere, lying where they fell, lips and teeth drawn back in their faces, snarling their fury in the rictus of death. Elsewhere, it was the synthetic equivalent of John Jones's despair that washed down on the populace of the cities. Within minutes, niggling worry swelled into stressful anxiety that blossomed into hopelessness, that swiftly turned into full-blown, debilitating despair. Every nuance of the Martian's grief was synthesized and amplified by the Alpha's machine mind technology. The people knew they were going to die, knew their world was being taken over by something monstrous. All of their history, their achievements, everything they'd ever aspired to, was doomed. In their millions, they fell to the ground and wept for its passing. Where the Ritz Space Hotel once orbited, now there was nothing except clouds of debris interspersed with ruptured corpses. The three men hovered nearby. Superman and John Jones looked askance at each other. Could a natural disaster have caused this? A fault in the hotel's anti-gravity engines, for instance? Or a catastrophic meltdown in its supply of nuclear fuel? Both knew the answer was no, but Lobo settled the question definitively. He wrinkled his nose and snuffled, his super keen sense of smell picking up just the faintest trace of the Alpha. The bounty hunter punched data into the bike's onboard computer system and watched to see what would come up on the navigation screen.
Here we go.
There could be only one place the Alpha was heading, Galeazz. Information about the planet and its star system started to scroll down his screen, and Lobo grinned like a death's head. Galeazz wasn't too far away. With a little luck, they'd be confronting their foe within hours, and he'd be making plans for the big cred reward. Lobo pointed ahead, gunned the throttle. The Spazfrag shot away at high speed, leaving Superman and the Martian Manhunter to follow. The Alpha had decided not all of Galeazz's cities would be spared. Only those that had food manufacturing capability, or factories that could be converted into armament production lines were of use to its war effort. The others, and there were dozens of them, were marked for annihilation. 100 or so crystal ships gathered over one of the planet's largest conurbations. There was no need for them to use the beams that spread rage or despair. The factories and buildings here would burn along with their inhabitants. Peeling off into smaller groups of 10, the craft swooped down, locking in on their individual targets. A rain of bombs fell cityward. Seconds later, a series of bright explosions rocked the streets. The two heroes and their financially motivated companion glowed fiery red as they dived into Galeos' atmosphere.
Rondir!
Great Rao! It's a full-scale invasion! We have to stop it!
Time for us to take the gloves off. Let's do it.
Wait! You forget. The attack craft are manned by Vurcans.
Right! So I get my turkey shoot after all.
You do not understand. They do only what the Alpha forces them to do. The blame is not theirs. We cannot kill them in cold blood.
Say what?
I will try to use my telepathy to undo what the Alpha has done.
The Manhunter peeled off and dove away. The Bounty Hunter shook his head in disbelief.
Tell you what, Nancy. Why don't you go pick a few flowers, and we can give the murdering little creeps a posy each?
The Man of Steel didn't deign to reply. John Jones's mind zeroed in on one of the crystal craft, probing at the Vurcan pilot. There was no time for subtlety or sensitivity to the feelings of others. John plunged straight into the pilot's mind. And what he saw there shook him with disgust. The Vurcans had long since lost any memory of who they originally were. Even so, the creature John had mentally contacted on Vurk itself was still a thinking, semi-rational being, despite its primitive mindset. But the pilot here had no mind. His neurological circuits had been burned out and replaced with a simple directive: obey the Alpha. He was incapable of doing anything except following the dictates of his genocidal god. The Manhunter focused intently, trying to force the pilot to bend to his will. There was no reaction. Even the Martian's formidable telepathic powers were useless when there was virtually no mind to concentrate on.
I'm afraid these Vurcans are no longer independent creatures, but mindless automatons. There is no saving them.
All right, now maybe we can get down to the serious stuff. Frag it!
Lobo throttled the spaz frag and sent it into a steep dive. Saving cities wasn't exactly his bag, but shooting things and blowing them up most certainly was.
All right, Semtex. Here's where you earn your keep.
I already earned my keep. I set you free, didn't I?
You already been rewarded for that. I ain't fried you in ages.
You are charity personified. Command and I will obey, oh mighty one.
Lobo ignored the sarcasm. He was having too much fun.
Here's your command. Seek and destroy.
Spike cannon shattered out a stream of tracers that ripped into a pair of crystal ships. Built as attack craft, they relied solely on their stone hulls for defense. Enough, perhaps, to face the air force of a backward planet, but nowhere near enough to face the full wrath of a spaz frag piloted by a psychopathic Zarnian.
Two down, and a frag of a lot more to come.
A half dozen of the craft had witnessed their companion's destruction. They shot toward Lobo, weapons blazing, their energy beams rebounding harmlessly from the space bike's force field.
Oh, you want to play chicken, huh?
Lobo turned the bike in a tight loop that left him facing the oncoming craft. He flipped the twin turbo's boost switch. He hit the lead ship so hard that the spaz frag plowed straight through it, smashing it to pieces. With all its weapons firing, he maneuvered the bike between the other craft, like a pinball in an arcade game, picking them off at will. Several of the ships fired at him but missed, their beams raking into their companions. Ship after ship after ship blossomed into flame and plummeted downward, trailing smoke and debris.
Ha ha ha! Eight down and I'm just starting to warm up! Let's go frag the rest of them bastages.
Superman felt sick at heart as he flew toward one of the Vurcan attack formations. Their pilots might be throwbacks, barely worthy of being called sentient beings, but they were innocent, and they were alive. and Superman was sworn to defend life, not destroy it. Summoning his super speed, he streaked past the craft, then banked sharply so he was above them. Some of them started firing at him, but his invulnerable Kryptonian skin just shrugged off their beams. Twin rays of pencil-thin energy lanced from Superman's eyes. Like lasers, his heat vision burned through a crystal hull, destroying its stabilizers and turning the weapons relays to a molten mass. The ship stopped firing and turned to limp away. But in the time it would take Superman to disable them all this way, they'd be free to drop their deadly cargoes on the city skyscrapers below. Superman came to a decision. Speeding up until he was no more than a blur, the Man of Steel circled the wedge-shaped formation time and again. The turbulence caused in his wake threw the ships into each other, buffeting them like pressure waves on a storm front. Unable to control their flight, the stricken ships plunged one after another into the sea. At least the Vrkens might stand a chance of survival crashing into water, although if what John had said was true, they would no longer be able to exist on their own. But that didn't make what Superman had to do any easier. Gritting his teeth, he flew off in search of the enemy. Superman's dilemma was shared by his friend. Like the Man of Steel, John Jones would never willingly take a life. Yet what choice did he have? He was hovering over a city under assault from dozens of crystal ships. He could disable every ship manually, and while he was doing it, the others would continue their barrage of death and destruction. His psionic skills were useless without proper mind stew effect. He glanced down at the city, pockmarked with burning buildings and huge craters, and steeled his resolve. The Alpha was to blame for this atrocity. Soon, there must come a reckoning. But in the meantime, there was work to be done. The Martian prayed to his ancestors for forgiveness and swooped to the attack. On the other side of the planet, the Alpha stood atop a magnificent skyscraper, basking in the sun's rays. As light from the sun was absorbed by the artificial intelligence's crystal body, it was reduced to its fundamental particles and stored in the near-infinite molecular latticework of the quartz. The Alpha lowered its head and pointed a massive arm at an adjacent 30-story office block. Intense beams of energy crackled from its fingertips, arcing toward the base of the building. The Alpha lumbered across the roof of the skyscraper he was on and hurled itself into the air, becoming a living projectile as it smashed its way into a glass and steel structure. Slender aliens cringed away from the monstrous figure. It ignored them all, apart from one female. It grabbed her in one giant hand, careful not to damage her. She would be the sole survivor of the Galliel's race, a last daughter for the Alpha's collection. The Alpha raked the room with a glance, energy bolts leaping from its eyes. The others died instantly. The Alpha cradled the woman, shielding her with its body as it left the building and took again to the air. Flew up to one of the crystal ships and transferred her to the Vrkens' care. The ship blasted away from the others, ferrying her back to Vrk and imprisonment in an artificial intelligence's museum of life. It was then that the Alpha felt it, a disturbance in the electromagnetic spectrum that resulted from the interplay of the planet's field and that of the sun. Something was not as it should be. Its crystal craft were falling from the skies. The Alpha shot away, traveling halfway around the planet with as little effort as it would take to cross a street.
Do you, Darlene, take this man, this bounty hunter, this main man, to be your lawful wedded husband?
Darlene's already impressive bosoms swelled with pride.
I do.
Almost shyly, she glanced to the side, batting her long eyelashes. Lobo stood beside her, resplendent in a smart, well-fitted tuxedo, white shirt, and psychedelic tie. Thankfully, he'd heeded her wishes and wasn't wearing his chain and hook. The last thing she wanted on the biggest day of her life was trouble. He smiled down at her. Darlene's pulse raced. Her knees went weak, and she almost swooned as she lost herself in the bottomless depths of his gorgeous red eyes.
And do you, Lobo, take this babe Darlene to be your lawful wedded wife?
Do I? You bet your bony butt I do.
Then he was sweeping her up in those strong arms, his lips gently caressing hers, the hardness of his body pressing against her flesh under the filmy silk wedding dress.
So, what do you think, Darlene?
Darlene's daydream popped like a soap bubble impaled on a nail. Al was lowering himself onto a stool at the table where she sat, lost in her dreams. Al had closed the diner while he and Darlene cleaned up, fixed up, and redecorated as best they could. Now he gestured around the little restaurant, which gleamed and shone, superficially at least. But if you looked a little closer, you could see the holes in the walls staffed with makeshift filler and the bashes and dents in the tables and chairs. Al had used the next month's stock money to pay for the materials. Professional workmen would have to wait till Lobo coughed up what he owed. And Darlene knew he would pay up. Lobo always kept his word.
Would you buy a shrimp burger and a beer here?
I wouldn't eat any place else.
I know you don't want to hear this, but personally, I'd be more than happy if Lobo never came back.
That's unfair, Al. He didn't wreck the diner deliberately. He was only protecting me.
Well, why couldn't he have taken those creeps outside to protect you? Why does he always have to smash my place up?
Oh, Al, you're exaggerating. It's only happened twice.
Al looked at her.
Only?
I'm sorry, Al. I can't control Lobo. He's not my boyfriend.
Darlene looked down at the table. She really did feel sorry for Al, who had been struggling for years to make ends meet. And just when things were starting to look up, Lobo paid his first visit, fell in lust with Darlene, and kept coming back.
You should forget about him. The guy is nothing but trouble.
That's not true. Any girl would be proud to take his arm.
Sure, as long as he wasn't spitting, or cursing, or puking, or fighting, or...
Come on, lighten up. Let's get the diner open for business again. Your mood will soon improve once the cash register starts to jingle.
She went over to the diner entrance and flipped the closed sign over.
Looks as if we have customers already. There's a ship docked outside.
Darlene glanced briefly at her reflection in the microwave oven's polished glassine front. She pouted her lips and moistened them with her tongue. She ran her hands over her breasts, patted down her tight-fitting apron, and opened the door.
Welcome to Alaska!
To find the barrel of a gun sticking in her face. Unaware of this, Al Fratowski looked up and plastered a professional smile on his face as Darlene led four figures into the diner.
Welcome to Al's! Darlene will show you to a table and...
It was then that Al noticed the gun in the tall, golden-eyed man's hand.
Is there a problem, gents?
No. We just need your waitress for a while.
Al could see Darlene's face was pale with shock. She really was too sensitive for this kind of life.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys, but hey, I got a big party coming in, and I need Darlene here.
I'm not asking you, chubby. I'm telling you. We'll bring her back safe and sound in a day or so. Just don't go notifying the cops, or we'll be back for you.
Then the four of them were gone, and Darlene with them.
Well, that's just great.
Al slumped in a chair. He didn't know how, but somehow he just knew this was all Lobo's fault.
This is impossible. Impossibility is merely the failure to consider everything in context. Our emotional weapons should have crippled them, and yet they fight back.
A score of Galia's aircraft screamed across the sky, a mile or so in front of the flying behemoth. The jet fighters were heading en masse toward a trio of Verkan crystal craft. As they came within firing range, the jets opened up with their weaponry. The Verkan ships could have withstood an assault from two or three of their foes, but 20 acting in unison, firing as one, was too much. One of the craft erupted in a bright ball of flame. Even as it spiraled down toward the ground, the other ships exploded too. The Alpha altered its direction, putting it on an interception course with the Galios craft. Beams lanced from its eyes and the tips of its fingers, ripping into the old-fashioned aircraft. It didn't stop until all the jet fighters were wiped out of existence. On a military airstrip below, the Alpha could make out a group of figures. All were recognizable as the slender, graceful people of Galios, except one. He stood taller and much bulkier, and was wrapped in an ankle-length cape. He was also green.
The Martian? How can he have escaped? Irrelevant. No doubt he has used his telepathic powers to purge the debilitating effects of our beams from the pilot's minds. We have his DNA. We have a complete record of his electrochemical makeup. We do not need him. We must crush him.
The pilot was shaking and trembling, close to being petrified by pure, blind rage.
Be at peace.
John Jones held one hand on either side of the pilot's head and concentrated on driving out the feeling that had seized him. It could be no picnic to be infused with the type of fury John had seen Lobo exhibit when he had tried to burst out of the Alpha cell. Already, John had restored hundreds of the pilots to normality. The men were shaken, but keen to fight back against the evil that was plundering their world. An entire squadron of their jets had taken off together, their crews grimly determined to take the unequal fight back to the enemy. They were outgunned and outnumbered, but to a man, they took to the skies. John removed his hands. The man's face was placid now, his eyes bright and clear.
Minute 40. Minute 40.
John nodded as the pilot thanked him and pointed to the airstrip.
Your people will thank you if you fight back.
Catch him, Mitt.
The pilot nodded and, followed by two crew members, started to run toward one of the waiting planes. Suddenly, the Martian turned to look up. There was no time to avoid the impact. The Alpha's momentum was unbelievable, and both of them disappeared into the ground. They plunged down through layers of soil and concrete, landing with bone-jarring impact on the reinforced floor of an underground storage bay. Trapped under the Alpha, John summoned all of his strength and tried to heave it off. But the Alpha was every bit as strong as the Manhunter and resisted his efforts with apparent ease. Its massive stone hands curled into fists, pounding at John's head. The Manhunter felt the force of every senses-shattering blow. He knew that somehow he had to gain the upper hand. The storage bay was about 15 feet high, perhaps four times that in length. Crates of aircraft spares and boxes of ammunition were stacked up against the walls in several places, and there were several small metal tanks, presumably for holding fuel. Well above head height, heavy insulated cables ran the length of the chamber wall. Obviously, the electricity supply for the base above. There were several of what were obviously fire extinguishers bracketed to the wall in different places. Shifting his weight, he hurled himself upright, throwing off the crystal monster. The Alpha's foot slipped in a glistening pool of spilled oil, and it fell heavily into a stack of crates. The crates tumbled down on top of it, almost burying it. John ripped one of the fire extinguishers off the wall and hurriedly primed it. The Alpha burst out of the fallen crates, hurling splintered wood everywhere, and found itself gazing into the nozzle of the extinguisher. John hit the plunger. Thick white foam billowed out, filling the Alpha's eyes and nostrils and mouth. It clawed clumsily at its face, trying to brush off the invasive chemicals. The Martian smashed the end of the extinguisher into the Alpha's mouth, the force of the impact rupturing the metal canister and covering the creature in an eruption of foam. The Alpha lashed out blindly, one massive fist ripping out a two-foot chunk of the wall as John ducked under the blow. The Manhunter knew he had to keep clear and get the fight over with as swiftly as possible. He leapt into the air, his hand closing around one of the thick electric cables. As he dropped back to the floor, he wrenched it hard. The cable snapped, leaving John holding the live end. Blue sparks fizzed and popped as he held the wire out at arm's length and advanced toward the Alpha. Perhaps electricity could achieve what brute force couldn't. The Alpha lurched forward, and John thrust the sparking cable directly into its faceted crystal face. There was a blinding blue explosion, and high voltage flooded through the Alpha's body. It didn't twitch and jerk the way Lobo had when his muscles' nerve endings were disrupted. The Alpha had no nerve endings. Instead, it froze, paralyzed. A tiny quiver passed over its face.
Yes, electricity might not destroy it, but it is certainly having an effect.
John kept the cable jammed against its face, but the effects seemed to be diminishing. The Alpha's eyes flashed, and random, tiny bolts of lightning seemed to swirl deep inside its crystal body. Then the random arcs began to coalesce into a pattern.
Herodnir!
Somehow, the Alpha was adjusting its internal mechanisms to accommodate the flow of electrons. It was turning John's weapon against it into fresh power for itself. Without warning, the Alpha lashed out with a backhand swipe. Caught unaware, John's head snapped back, and he careened into one of the fuel storage tanks, bursting it. The sparking cable touched the metal tank, then the chamber erupted in a volcano of flame. Fire. John's nemesis. As flames flickered and danced around him, his strength drained away. His limbs suddenly weak, the Martian's legs buckled under him, and he pitched forward onto the floor. Agony burned through his whole body. Dimly, he was aware of the Alpha looming out of the flame like a phoenix as it stood over him, victorious. John only had one chance now. A desperate telepathic message stabbed from his mind. Then, everything ebbed away from him, and he slumped unconscious, with the flames still licking at his body. Superman had been digging a channel at super speed from the coast to the heart of a burning city, providing water for the emergency services as they fought desperately to douse the flames. Now, as he flew at phenomenal speed toward the airbase, his telescopic vision probed the yawning crater in the concrete runway.
No!
He banked his body in a steep dive, aiming himself at the crater. He swooped in through the shattered concrete. And unleashed a blast of frigid super breath that pushed all the heat out of the room. The flames disappeared as if by magic, and powdery frost turned the interior sparkling white. Superman didn't slow down. He grabbed the startled Alpha and angled himself up again, smashing a new exit route through the concrete ceiling, dragging the crystal giant with him. He burst out into the sunshine, his momentum carrying them high into the air. Superman could feel the Alpha starting to struggle as it realized what was happening to it. Hovering half a mile in the air, the Man of Steel raised the Alpha above his head in both hands and hurled the crystal creature downward with as much force as he could muster. Intent on pressing home his advantage, Superman again dived at his adversary. The Alpha had come down in a junkyard, miraculously untouched by the Birkin's assault. The yard was piled high with obsolete hovercraft, rusting wrecks, and accident write-offs. Jumbled piles of scrap and spares lay everywhere, giving the place the characteristic appearance of junkyards throughout the universe. As he descended, the Man of Steel reached to grasp a length of chain from which a heavy wrecking ball was suspended. Ripping it free, Superman whirled the ball around his head like a medieval knight's mace. The Alpha struggled out of the tangled metal that restrained it, tossing girders aside like matchsticks, and Superman struck. The solid steel ball slammed against the Alpha's head. Again and again, the ball whirled, gleaming in the alien sunshine, as Superman repeatedly drove it into his foe.
This is no use. It's keeping him occupied, but it's not doing any real damage. What else was John trying to tell me?
The Martian psionic call hadn't just been a plea for help. He had tried to tell Superman something else, about how the crystal monster might be defeated. But his thoughts had faded and died before he finished. As the ball spun in the air again, the Alpha finally managed to react. It snatched up a twisted girder and swung it like a baseball bat. Steel connected with steel, the wrecking ball was ripped from Superman's hands and sent flying a half mile across the city. The crystal giant loomed over Superman, who reacted by unleashing blistering heat vision from his eyes. The beams struck the Alpha in the chest. It stopped and looked down, curious, as it saw the top inch or so of its crystal skin start to bubble and melt.
You cannot harm us, but we retain the ability to harm you.
Fierce green beams shot from its eye sockets.
Kryptonite!
Pain spread like wildfire through Superman's nervous system. The Alpha must have had it stored inside its crystal body. He threw himself back, but the Alpha merely swiveled its head, keeping the toxic beams trained on Superman. Consciousness started to fade as the waves of pain swelled faster. Dimly, he was aware of the Alpha's arrogant voice.
We are the first. You are the last. We have no hesitation in annihilating any who interfere with our plans.
Then, Superman knew no more.
Bravo! Encore, Maestro, please.
Lobo sat on his bike, hovering 10 feet above the junkyard. The Martian's message hadn't just been sent to Superman's mind. Lobo had picked it up too, and come to investigate, though in more leisurely fashion than Superman, as he had taken time out to shoot down several more of the Birkin attack craft.
Sorry to interrupt your fun, Alfie, but this is where the Bogue dishes out some payback. How'd you like them onions?
The massive figure crumpled to the ground. Fragments of crystal had been ripped from its body with every shot. It rallied, grabbing at a rusted auto chassis for support as it struggled to get its huge bulk upright again. The bike was fresh out of ammo. Not surprising, given the amount that had been expended escaping from Verk and shooting down the assault ships.
And here's the coup de grace, Rocky.
Lobo leapt from the bike with his chain and hook spinning around his head. He landed atop the fallen Alpha and brought the hook down. Its tip sunk a good 6 inches into the crystal skull. Nimbly, Lobo leapt off, leaving the hook embedded in his enemy's head.
Guess you won't be doing much without a brain.
His pleasure turned to puzzlement as the Alpha lurched suddenly to its feet.
Then you guess incorrectly. Our brain is our body. There is no central cranial area, as is common with ordinary life.
Well, frag me sideways. I guess I'm gonna have to do it the hard way, then. All right, Brainiac. I'll rip you limb from limb, then pulverize the bits. Bet you won't be doing much thinking when you're oatmeal.
They circled each other warily, more like primeval monsters than heavyweight boxers, each looking for a critical opening. Lobo struck first, lashing out with a kick to the Alpha's groin. It would have doubled up any normal foe, as well as putting an end to any future paternity hopes he might have fostered. The Alpha didn't even flinch. Its fist launched in an overhand right that took Lobo flush in the face. But the bounty hunter didn't fall back. Anything a stone chump could do, he could do better. Blows rained down from all sides. Neither budged an inch. Miles away in the chamber under the airbase, John Jones was on his knees, doubled over. The fires had all been extinguished and the frost was melting away, but the stench of gas oil still hung heavy in the air. John's whole body ached, a sensation he was unused to feeling. The flames had consumed him. For an awful instant, he had feared that he was about to die. Superman must have received his message and used his super breath to douse the flames. But where was he now? And where was the Alpha? The Martian got to his feet, noticing for the first time the second hole smashed in the chamber roof, this one from the inside. His legs felt unsteady, his senses still partly dazed. He would have to wait a while before trying to fly. And then he remembered. Electricity had affected the Alpha. His mind raced as John struggled to understand why that would be so. The Alpha was made out of stone, a notoriously bad conducting medium. It was an artificial intelligence, not really alive. It had no muscles or nerve ends in its body, no ganglions in its skull because it had no brain. Yet it was able to store energy, presumably in the molecular structure of its quartz body. It could amplify and discharge that energy from eyes or hands in the form of beams.
Of course! Electromagnetic fields.
The electricity from the cable must have temporarily overwhelmed the Alpha's own inner electromagnetic flows. The very flows that must keep its intelligence together. Without them, it would have no way of maintaining a constant identity.
John steeled himself, ready to leap into the air. But nausea overwhelmed him again, and he leaned back wearily against the chamber wall. He had to let the others know. This was a matter of life and death. Lobo was getting fed up. They must have traded 100 blows. His knuckles were torn and bleeding. His forehead was gashed where he'd employed a sneaky headbutt. And his healing factor was working overtime to keep up with repairing the damage the Alpha was doing to his arms, shoulders, and torso. One foot was aching, too, where the Alpha had stamped hard on his instep. Yet the Bounty Hunter couldn't see a way out of this. Unlike Baldy or Big Blue, he had no tricky little powers like invisibility, heat vision, or frigid breath. For the main man, what you saw was what you got. Big gun, big knife, and a hook that would gut a space whale. Normally, he'd be able to wear down any foe, because his healing factor repaired him, while the other guy could only get weaker over time. Plus, of course, the madder he got, the stronger he felt. But none of that seemed to cut any ice with the Alpha. The Alpha had him by the throat now, its grip relentlessly strengthening. Lobo grabbed its hand, trying to pry off the huge stone paw. He succeeded only in snapping off one of the stubby crystal fingers. He tried to hold on to it, but a swinging punch put it into his ear. Lobo lost his grip, and the finger fell to the ground. It was then that Lobo felt his skull begin to prickle. That horrible, maggoty feeling, like mantis worms burrowing into his brain.
Baldy, what have I told you, you mind-invading bastard? I don't...
Shut up and listen, Lobo. I suspect the Alpha powers itself via electromagnetism, possibly absorbing it directly from sunlight. If I am right, you can...
Enough said, Gabby. The main man hears and understands.
The Alpha had him in a bear hug now. Straining to crack his spine, Lobo jabbed his thumbs into the empty eye sockets, waggling them around, trying to get a purchase and start ripping off its head. But thanks to the Martian, now there might be another way.
Zomtex! Hit it with the EM disruptor!
The spaz frag still hovered a dozen or so feet off the ground, its every sensor trained on the battle royal below. Zomtex was enjoying this more than anything since, well, since he'd had his brain yanked out. To see Lobo being battered, his blood spilled, made Zomtex unspeakably happy. And now the creep had to go and spoil it all by ordering him to use the electromagnetic disruptor. The disruptor was part of the bike's force field defenses, used for diverting energy beams or circumventing the defense shields of enemy craft. But it could be separated out and fired as a weapon in its own right, if the bike's SSCS allowed. Zomtex was the bike's SSCS. And he was inclined to say, go screw yourself with your own hook, Lobo. For this, of course, was Zemtex's big chance. The break he'd been waiting for. The long-awaited big boom. Both superheroes were out of it. Superman was sprawled unconscious in the junkyard below. And who knew where the Martian was? Zomtex felt a prickle of pure pleasure shoot through his brain. He imagined screwing up his eyes. The sensors zoomed in on Lobo. And Zomtex did that funny little thing inside his head.
Bye-bye, Bo!
The first blast exploded between Lobo's legs. Huh? The Bounty Hunter's jaw dropped in shock, and he let go his grip of the Alpha.
What the f***?
Zemtex's second blast took him between the shoulder blades, throwing him forward to crack his head on a stripped-out engine block. Lobo slumped as if poleaxed. The Alpha dived on top of him, massive fists raining down flurries of blows on the defenseless Bounty Hunter. The hypothalamus in Zemtex's brain was flashing like a lighthouse, pumping out dopamine, infusing every neuron with pleasure. Lobo was down. The Bounty Hunter was being hammered to a pulp by ruthless stone fists. Lobo's blood was gushing from a dozen wounds. Man, it was heaven. But the disembodied outlaw was careful not to get too carried away. He couldn't afford to be having some kind of mental orgasm. He needed to keep his wits about him. Quietly, he edged the hovering bike farther away. Blood and gore stained the quartz fists, as at last the behemoth's blows ceased. Leaving Lobo limp and seemingly lifeless, it rose to its feet and turned to look up at the hovering Spazfrag.
Why? Why did you attack the Zanian and not us? Are you a form of machine intelligence?
You could say that. Alternatively...
While he spoke, Xemtex surreptitiously decoupled the EMD from the defensive shields and reversed its polarity. All at once, an invisible, intangible vortex of electromagnetic forces enveloped the unsuspecting Alpha. Sparks flashed from its eyes and mouth, and its whole body juddered like an aircraft fuselage in a typhoon.
We are...
The Alpha's head began to vibrate slightly, and it toppled over. Smashing into and through the hood of a dilapidated hovercraft, it lay there, half inside the chassis, quivering very faintly.
I was going to say, alternatively, I can hit you with the disruptor and take you back for the reward myself.
Xemtex took special care to ensure the EMD was still active. Lobo was more of a paste than a man. The Alpha was a docile prisoner.
Quarantino, here I come!
Being an outlaw wasn't so different from being a bounty hunter, but once he picked up the reward, that was it. Xemtex was retired. No more bank robberies, muggings, freight heists, or massacres, and definitely no more bounty hunting.
We are what I...
The Alpha is first
or last.
Every time the Alpha tried to put a coherent thought together, the random nature of the disruptor's frequency switches made it impossible. If it couldn't think, it couldn't act. And if it couldn't act, it was just another hunk of pretty rock. Its plans for universal conquest were gone. Now they were just random noise in an unconnected swarm of neurons.
Perhaps we are not.
The Spazfrag's audio sensors were picking up something incoming. It was Baldy and Big Blue, blurred streaks in the sky.
So, the superheroes return. What kept you guys? I sure could have used your help to subdue this big creep.
John Jones and Superman stared first at the collapsed Alpha, Lobo's hook and chain still trailing from its head, and then at the barely breathing body of the bounty hunter.
You did this?
Who else do you see around? Of course I did it. The Alpha was pounding Lobo into salad dip. I tried to stop it, blasted it with everything the bike has. It wasn't until I tried the EM disruptor that something finally worked.
Then I was right. Electromagnetism can defeat it.
The Martian Manhunter strode to Lobo's body and stooped down to examine him.
He is in a bad way. He should receive medical attention.
Well, there isn't a doctor in the galaxy with coming in a mile of Lobo. They say he has a phobia about medics. Reacts very violently to them. But don't you worry about the main man. His healing factor will have him back on his feet, cursing and carousing in no time.
And you? What will you do?
Xemtex made all the bike's lights flash at once.
Me? I'm on a roll. I intend to exchange the Alpha for a large pot of folding green. I'll then exchange a wad of cash for a brand new body at one of those Grobot transplant shops. Virile, muscular, rippling torso, inflatable pecs. You know, a bit like you guys. But definitely not green. No offense, Mr. Martian. Then, I'm going on vacation. Quite possibly, forever. Of course, you guys played your part. I'm more than willing to split the cash three ways.
We don't work for money.
Which was exactly what Xemtex knew he would say. Superheroes were all the same. They liked sacrificing themselves for other people, especially when morality rather than money was involved. Their payment was a jolt of nice emotion when the job was done. They must be paupers when they retire. Well, who was Xemtex to argue?
Will the Zarnian not want his share?
Probably. But just like with you, Mr. Mars, Lobo didn't give me the benefit of a trial. He cut my head open like an egg. Anyhow, he was beat. I saved a bastard's life, though who knows why I should have. The way I see it, Lobo owes me, big time. He can have his share, if he can find me.
I wouldn't want to be in your shoes if he does find you. Sorry, perhaps shoes isn't the best metaphor.
By the time Lobo finds a way off Galliaz, I'll be lost in space. Even Lobo isn't dumb enough to waste the rest of his life sniffing the stars and looking for me.
Very well. The decision is yours. We have work to do here, helping the victims to recover.
I wish I could go with you guys, but I'm a little short of limbs right now. I'll be thinking of you. See you around. Not if I can help it, though.
Zemtex managed to wait until they were well out of sensor range. Then blasted Lobo's battered body with several more mental explosions. Zemtex could have spent a week here just blasting that bastard. Maybe he should give Lobo time to recover, let him think his healing factor had him on the mend, then blast the hell out of him all over again. But if Big Blue and Baldy came back, they wouldn't tolerate that kind of torture. And if the Alpha figured out a way to overcome the disruptor, Zemtex would get creamed. It was better for Zemtex to load up his prisoner and hightail it off Galliaz. The bike swooped lower. A retractable grapple shot out, securing itself around the Alpha's leg.
Time to hit the trail, big guy. And this time in blessed silence.
Zemtex was going to burn out the radio circuits, so he'd never have to listen to Lobo's music again. He visualized himself with a spiffy new body, something that would really turn the babes on. He'd go strutting his stuff at exclusive parties, or maybe mix it with the entertainment crowd at the Holopic premieres. He'd give up beer and start drinking exotic liqueurs flown in from distant worlds.
Huh.
With a start that was close to being physical, he realized he was going to miss being part of the Spazfrag. Being the Spazfrag, in fact. Now that his nerves had settled in and stopped jangling, he found it kind of satisfying. The all-over itch was still there, but even that didn't seem so much of a hassle anymore. In fact, he might even miss it if it wasn't there, the way he might miss a toothache.
No, this is stupid thinking. My nerve cells are becoming part of the bike. That's why I feel this way. I need to be careful about this. Hell, if I drop my card, I could end up as a bike forever.
He was just about to take to the air, trailing his captive.
Not so fast, bad boy.
What now?
Zemtex swiveled his sensors and saw a tall, gaunt figure with bright golden eyes step into the junkyard. He had a gun in each hand, both leveled at the Spazfrag. The stranger was flanked by two manic-looking coons. One wielded an electromace, the other a laser knife. Frantically, Zemtex ran a search of the bike's data files. There was nothing remotely like these guys in the villain sections, but the information on bounty hunters told him all he needed to know.
I think you have something that belongs to us. We're here to take it back.
How did you put a civilization back together? You sped from city to city, using your super breath to put out the raging fires. You used your heat vision to blast channels from the ocean into the hearts of the conurbations, providing the emergency services with water. You used your super strength to demolish unsafe buildings and shore up those that could be saved.
Be at peace.
You used telepathy to clear clouded minds and return people to their normal state. And everywhere, you rescued those who were in distress. But as charities on Earth had long since learned, immediate relief was only part of the story. It was far better to enable people to help themselves rather than treat them as helpless victims. So you targeted the hospitals, making their repair and restoration a prime objective. You ensured that food stores were available and organized supply lines. You helped set up coordination centers where survivors could be put in touch with their friends and family. You organized the patrols whose grim task it would be to search the ruins for the living and the dead. And you started the first mass pyres to destroy the bodies that would otherwise putrefy and bring disease. But even when that was done, the superhero's task was far from over.
I think they can take it from here themselves. They're a resilient people.
Lobo will be recovering. Perhaps we should check.
Lobo doesn't need us, and he wouldn't thank us for letting his space bike go. Besides, we still have another problem to solve.
John Jones looked at him blankly for a moment.
Of course. Verk. The creatures I contacted there were not so far gone as the pilots and troops. It may be possible to save them.
And if not?
The Martian's eyes were grim under his craggy brows.
I do not have an answer for that.
Xemtex was on the horns of a dilemma, and both horns were more than sharp enough to impale his metaphorical behind. He'd used up all the reserves, and now the Spasfrag was totally out of ammunition. He couldn't disconnect the EM disruptor without freeing the Alpha, so the bike had no defense shield. His only options were to hand the Alpha over to the bounty hunters, or to blast their sorry butts. A man of action to the last, Xemtex chose the latter. He concentrated hard, using the bike's sensors to pinpoint his targets. For a fraction of a second, the air just in front of the bounty hunters seemed to ripple. Angel Eye's reactions were faster than any Xemtex had ever seen. In the split second when the air rippled, he already had seen the size of the threat. He somersaulted backward. As he landed, he threw himself into a roll, further distancing himself from the ensuing explosion. Random the Coon was big and tough, but lightness on his feet wasn't one of his talents. The explosion had taken him full in the abdomen, ripping open his flesh. He stared down in disbelief.
Oh, Frag.
His knees buckled, and he pitched forward in a heap.
Randon!
They can bury you both in the same grave.
Xemtex prepared to blast again. There was something kind of appealing about killing two brothers on the same day, especially when there were stinking bounty dogs out to steal his rightful property. By now, Angel Eyes had dived behind a hummock of scrap metal, opening fire with both guns. Most of the shots ricocheted harmlessly off the spaz frag, but two of the external cameras were hit, disintegrating into junk.
Damn it!
Both of the smashed sensors were front-mounted, meaning that his view of the bounty hunters was now severely compromised. And if he couldn't see them properly, he couldn't blow them up. Angel Eye squeezed off another few rounds. The other coon had crawled away when his brother fell, but Xemtex could see, albeit through a blur, that he was on his way back. And he was carrying the biggest cannon Xemtex had seen since the Psychodroid's pipe gun. Bert raised the firing tube to his shoulder.
I'm gonna show you what happens to bikes that kill my brother!
Do not hit the bike!
The coon froze instantly. A previously unseen figure stepped out into the open, partly visible on the bike's lateral sensors. One hand was held aloft, its bony fingers tracing strangely hypnotic patterns in the air. The Arcturan. According to the bike's databank, he was the fourth and most powerful member of Angel Eye's gang. Because of the broken cameras, Xemtex could only get a partial view. But what the hell? He might as well take a crack at the new guy, too. Only when he tried to focus and produce an explosion, nothing happened.
My magic decrees your resistance is over. Zebra-ira. You will remain immobile until I say otherwise.
Looks like the bastard's right. I can't move.
He killed my brother. He deserves to die.
Cabello gestured toward the figure of the Alpha. The stone giant lay unmoving, still held by the bike's grapple.
The bike has the Alpha encaged in a disruptor field. Any damage to the bike might set it free.
So what? We blow up the bike, then we blow up the Alpha. It's clear as daylight to me.
The Kund must have taken the Arcturan's silence to signify assent. He cradled the huge gun against his shoulder.
Bert, I said do not hit the bike.
Screw you, Warlock. Sometimes magic has to take a backseat to a very big bang.
What happened next took them all by surprise, especially Vert. Even as Vert's clawed finger tightened on the trigger,
Zelifi.
His head exploded in a gory bloom of brains and bone. He fell beside his brother, staining the ground red around them.
Oh, Frank. If he can do that to his own pals, what the hell's he gonna do to me?
Angel Eyes had come out of cover. He holstered his guns, his golden eyes flashing as he glared at Cabale. The Arcturan lowered his head.
I apologize for Vert's death. But there was no other way.
A simple paralysis spell would have done the trick. It would have been easier on Vert, too.
It was not possible while I still hold the pike in thrall.
Anyhow, I thought you said you could take the Alpha.
I did, and I believe I could have. But was it not you who said this is no time for running risks?
Well, guess we split the bounty two ways, then.
The bounty hunter's needle ship had landed unseen during the climactic battle between Lobo and the Alpha. The Arcturan's occult senses told him immediately what was going on. It had been Angel Eye's decision that they should bide their time, let the others exhaust or kill themselves, then step in and pick up the pieces. A very successful strategy, as it had turned out. Although, the loss of both of the coons still rankled with Angel Eye's. Now he loped off with long strides to where they'd hidden their ship. He'd seen Superman and the Martian Manhunter leave on their mission to rebuild the planet. They could return at any time, and he'd rather be off-world if they did. Not that they had any beef with him at Cabale, of course. It was just that he'd prefer to get this sewn up sooner rather than later. Angel Eyes popped open a hatch and stooped as he entered. He sealed it behind him and made his way up the short, narrow corridor to the cabin-cum-flight deck.
No.
He slid the bolt out of its fastener and pulled the storage door open. Darlene came spilling out, her eyes red from crying.
Where is he? Where's Lobo?
Oh, Lobo is pizza topping, honey. Roadkill. Seems he wasn't tough enough for the Alpha. The guy stomped him real good. Good enough to kill him, I'd say.
Liar!
Darlene threw herself forward, her hands stretching up to rake her long fingernails down Angel Eye's cheek. The bounty hunter grabbed both her wrists in his strong hands. He could feel tiny wheels of blood trickle down his face.
Listen, you fool. We made a mistake bringing you here. You're supposed to be our insurance that Lobo did what we wanted, but you weren't needed. So calm down, and we'll take you right back home again.
I don't want to go home. I want Lobo!
She managed to tear one hand free and curled her fingers to strike again. This time, Angel Eyes was ready. He grabbed her roughly by one arm and bundled her back into the compartment.
Lobo can't be dead!
He'll come for you! I know he will!
Yeah, yeah. You shut up now! Or maybe I'll just forget that I'm a gentleman. Would you rather be waiting table in the diner or lying on a slab in the morgue?
Darlene said nothing, and the bounty hunter eased himself into the control seat.
Frag me!
It would be simpler all around if they could just kill her now and dump her body in space. But he and Cabale had their licenses to consider. The manhunting fraternity might be a rough-and-ready lot, but generally they had to stay within the law. If any innocent citizens got hurt during an operation, it was likely to end in police involvement, heavy financial penalties, and more than likely, jail. Angel Eyes checked the comm screen as he fired up the engine. Good news. So far, the bounty on the Alpha was 500,000 credits, and rising. They were going to be rich. With long-practiced skill, Angel Eyes landed the ship directly in the junkyard, which really was a junkyard now. The fights had destroyed almost everything there. Using anti-grav dollies, he and Cabale hurriedly transferred the Alpha to their craft, using the ship's own EM disruptor to keep the creature secure. It would mean that they would be without defense shields on the return trip to Quarantino's, but that wouldn't matter. They were hardly likely to come under attack.
What about that?
The Arcturan was looking up at the still hovering, motionless Spaz Frag. Angel Eye stroked his chin, and his bright eyes narrowed thoughtfully.
Lobo will put himself back together sooner or later. Last thing we want for him is to find transport.
Leave it to me.
A few minutes later, the needle ship was rising back into the air. The Arcturan stood by an ob window, gesturing with one hand. Powerless to resist Cabale's magic, the bike rose too, keeping pace with the larger craft. They were about a mile up when the needle ship slowed, and Cabale's gesture ceased. Xemtex knew what was coming next, and it wasn't 1,000,000 credits. The Arcturan waved to him coyly, saying goodbye. The Spaz Frag plunged down nose first, engines on maximum overdrive, its speed increasing with every second. Through the damaged sensors, Xemtex had a blurry vision of the junkyard rushing up to meet him. He could see the speck that was Lobo's body still lying in the wreckage, getting larger all the time. He struggled to reestablish control of the plummeting bike, but to no avail. Magic said he was going to crash. And yes, he was going to crash.
Well, at least I get to take out the main man. Again, that's some kind of achievement, I guess. Even if nobody will ever know about it.
For the briefest of moments, he had the strangest of impulses. For perhaps only the second time in his life, he felt like praying. Then, Spaz Fragment Junkyard, with Lobo's body directly intervening. It wasn't pretty for any of them.